want to be happy today? The Bible says that a happy person finds wisdom and gets understanding. But it warns us that wisdom of this world is foolishness in God's sight. But the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Elizabeth Elliot has spent decades helping women understand the wisdom of the Bible. Welcome to Gateway to Joy. Be challenged to live wisely as you hear once again from your friend, Elizabeth Elliot.
You are loved with an everlasting love. That's what the Bible says, and underneath are the everlasting arms. This is your friend, Elizabeth Elliot, talking again today about when I was a little girl and we had our summer vacations at a wonderful place called Franconia, New Hampshire, in a house that we always called the cottage. It was really called Gale Cottage. And I told about having fun watching the little tiny brown field mice in the attic. Another friend was a little chipmunk who had a hole near the back porch. We would put crackers for him on the step and watch him from a distance as he tore up to seize them and raced back to the hole. That wasn't good enough for me, however. I wanted to look him in the eye. I waited until I was sure he was in the hole, sprinkled cracker crumbs and peanuts around it, and lay down with my nose about 2 feet away from the hole. After what seemed forever, up would come the tiny snout, and down it would go in a flash, over and over and over. I never moved, never made a sound. At last, his longing for those peanuts was too strong for his fear. The beady eyes looked into mine. One day, I succeeded in coaxing him to eat from my hand. We studied botany. Do you know what botany means? Study of flowers. Aunt Anne taught me the names of the flowers that grew near the cottage, and together we pressed them into a brown dime store notebook, cinquefoil, Quaker lady, and twin flower from the pine woods, wild orchid and lady's slipper from the low grassy place at the river's level, devil's paintbrush, butter and eggs, goldenrod, and Queen Anne's lace from the sun-filled meadow. Years later, I learned the bracken, ferns, and mosses, and showed other small children the wonders of the hairy cap moss, how you can take off its hairy cap, lift the lid of the tiny salt shaker, and pour out its pale green powder into the palm of your hand. My brother Tom describes the botany lessons our father gave us on a mountain climb. In the first half hour or so, when you were still walking along under the hardwood trees, he would point out the bunch berries, Clintonia borealis. There seemed to be no English name for this plant with the long single stalk and one shiny dark blue berry, and moose maple. He told us that the enormous moose maple leaves would always serve as a useful substitute if you had forgotten to bring along tissues in your pack. Further up, you began to see Labrador tea and creeping snowberry next to the trail, and the hardwoods gave way gradually to spruce trees. A few tall, straight ones would appear among the birches and maples. Then the hardwoods disappeared. On either side of the path, there would be dense growth of scrubby, gnarled spruces, their immemorial roots grasping the moss-covered rocks like tough old fingers that had been holding on against winds and blizzards since the beginning of the world. My father would take out his penknife and cut off little deposits of spruce gum that had oozed through the lichen-covered bark and give them to us to chew. You felt that this was a much cleaner and healthier confection than Wrigley's or Dentine. It was certainly more astringent and less sugary. As the trail climbed higher, the trees grew stubbier and stubbier until suddenly you found yourself at the timberline. Often a single step would take you from the scrubby spruce growth out into the immense upland above the timberline, with the whole world spreading away from you. The song of the white-throated sparrows came like a crystal echo up from the spruce forest below. My father would call back and forth to them and would stop every few minutes just to sniff the air and gaze with his hands on his hips. On most trips, he would observe at least once that the scene here was a very long way from 13th and Wood Streets, the dingy corner in Philadelphia, where his office was. And so we children were shaped. It is said that we are transformed in what we love. What do you love? Do you want to be transformed into the likeness of what you love? We thank God for giving us his mountains, forests, and streams to love, and that beautiful place Uncle Will had no idea that he was giving us. I'll make a few comments from the point of view of the mother. I'll just stick around the good old cottage has become a family quote, as I use that phrase so often over the years. Plans would be afoot to climb up to Lonesome Lake, or strike out for the Falling Waters Trail on Lafayette, or perhaps the fishermen of the family would think they might find greener pastures for fishing, how's that for mixing metaphors, by a 75-mile trip northeast to Lake Umbegog, the source of beautiful and trout-filled, they hoped, Androscoggin River. A few times I got to go along, but in the earlier years it was often a small tot who would soon tire of such a trip. So I was happy and content to stick around the good old cottage, and said so quite firmly. I might add that on several occasions the fishermen drove up the drive after dark, and Dad would make a circle of his thumb and forefinger to indicate the success of their efforts. I would then suggest they try a few holes in Gale River or Pond Brook, and almost without fail they would sheepishly return with several small but nice trout. Now remember, this is my mother's version of our summer vacations. She says, in the early days when Phil, Betty, that's me, and Dave were very small, facilities for washing clothes posed a problem. A kitchen had been built by then, but there was only one way to wash clothes and diapers. No laundromat was even heard of then. Three big blue enamel pails served for wash tubs. Two big kettles heated the water on the kerosene stove. I suppose that most of you who are listening to me have never even heard of having to heat water on a stove, except perhaps a tea kettle to make tea. You have hot water that comes out of a faucet in the bathroom and in the kitchen, don't you? But some of you may be living on a place where you have a pump, and you get only cold water out of that pump, so you have to heat it on the stove. Well, in Franconia, we did have some faucets, but it was all ice water that came from a spring. As for cleaning the big place, my mother goes on to say, I used to say that if Aunt Annie Slosson had had to clean it herself, it would have been built very differently. But aren't we glad she didn't? There is just no place to compare with it in the minds of most of us, I'm sure. What those mountains meant in the lives of each one of our six cannot be imagined. They prepared Phil for many a trek out into the bush with his Indians. Betty had no problem in hiking into Alkaland, over rough terrain and wading through rivers. Dave surmounted the mountains of Columbia on more than one occasion. Jenny found it easy to push through rough trails to see her missionary friends in the heart of Palawan in the Philippines. Tom broke records going up and down Mount Washington in a matter of hours, and Jim snowshoes all over the northern Minnesota landscape with no effort at all. And I will add here that my brother Jim, who is the youngest of my four brothers, now lives in Wyoming, where he climbs very high, very beautiful mountains. My mother says they all learned to, at least to doggy paddle in the hole of the big rock in Gale River, a good start to become the swimmers they all are now. For patience and precision, there's nothing better than learning to fly fish in the icy waters of the mountain streams, and these lessons were taught to Dave and Jim by their skillful father. Creeping down Black Brook, pushing their way through the thick alders with small rods and a short line, usually resulted in a nice creel, that's a basket that you keep fish in, full of beautiful, dark, native brook trout. In the evening, as the mist slowly formed on the meadows, and the haunting song of the white throats vied with the bell-like tones of the veery and the hermit thrush, and the purple light faded from the sides of Lafayette, there was a longing in one's heart to just keep things that way always. But this joy could not stay with us, as there was another added joy as we turned into the big cottage living room and a huge fire was lit in the lovely fireplace. These memories cannot be taken away from us. And as Amy Carmichael says, all that was ever ours is ours forever. For you children who have been listening to my stories this week, may I suggest that if you keep a journal, that you practice writing down, perhaps just on one page, exactly what you see from your bedroom window. If you're one of those very fortunate children whose parents do have a summer place where you go for your vacations, it would be wonderful for you to write a description of that place, the smells, the sights, the sounds, the things you especially love to do there that are not things like television and going on fun rides in some county fair or paying money to go on a water slide. It would be a good exercise for you to learn to put down the things that God made that you see. The animals, maybe just squirrels, the birds, the flowers. Do you know the names of the trees around your house? Well, here's some suggestions for assignments, maybe for you homeschoolers. Thank you for listening this week. I'm so glad that you do listen to Gateway to Joy, and it has been a special pleasure for me to read stories for you.
Anything, if offered to God, can and will become your Gateway to Joy. Join us next time for more encouragement and challenge from Elizabeth Elliott. This has been a production of the Bible Broadcasting Network.